Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome everyone to a Baseball America Playoff Podcast. John Manuel and J.J. Cooper with you. It's a whole new world, J.J., a world where Francisco Lindor's dreams come true. I just found that tweet. You already knew about this tweet, but I just found that tweet as we record this a little bit later in the afternoon on Thursday, but we'll still get you ready for game five of the National League Championship Series.
That tweet was from mid-season of 14.
June 2014.
That was not long before, because that was the year that Lindor, if I remember correctly, was at the Futures game for the last time and kind of said, no offense to any of this, I've appreciated right. The honor. I hope I'm never at this thing again because I want to be in the big leagues. And not long after, he was, and he's that already boy, one of the best shortstops in baseball.
That boy good, and not insignificant part of his game. He played 158 games this year, and not insignificant part for Cleveland, which won 3-1 yesterday. Four games, I wanted to say, in a best-of-seven series, dispatches the Blue Jays. Cubs obviously beat the Dodgers. JJ, let's wrap up the ALCS real quick. I think the story of the American League Championship Series is encapsulated by our debate. Who was the more important pitcher for the Cleveland Indians? Was it Corey Kluber, who threw nearly 12 innings and threw the most innings on the team and pitched very well? Or was it Andrew Miller, the ALCS MVP, who threw 7 2/3 innings? But they were always high leverage innings, and he struck out virtually everyone he faced. I mean, like, I think that Miller was clearly the more significant pitcher in this series, but I think that Kluber could do Miller's role, and that Miller could not do Kluber's role. Ergo, I think that Kluber is the better pitcher. But we're in the postseason. The starter reliever line is so blurred now. It's a distinction almost without a difference.
The funny thing about that is that those were the two guys who, really on the pitching staff, it doesn't work without either of them. Because you are right that Kluber has much more of a chance. I would agree with you that Kluber has much more of a chance to do something like what Miller did. I think Miller, we've had this debate in the office today.
But we can have it on the air.
But I don't think he would do it as well as what Miller did. You know, but that's saying that because Miller was as good as really a pitcher in a relief role could be.
Yeah,
it was extended innings, and he was beyond dominant. It was, these guys don't have a chance. I mean, again, I tweeted out from the game before, because you had the situation where the Indians, I think it was loaded the bases or had multiple guys on in the, and didn't get any runs out of it. And it's like, oh, that could really come back to hurt him. Oh, wait, no, wait, Andrew Miller.
Yeah, exactly.
He's pitching, so it's not going to hurt them at all. But because that was the game that they flipped it and Miller was closed it out and,
yeah,
and Allen pitched earlier. But as crazy as this is, the Cleveland Indians, I mean, stop and think on this for a second. The Cleveland Indians just made it all the way through the playoffs to the World Series, and they've done it with an ace and the rest of the starting pitching staff. Trevor Bauer, who's I'd say probably
he's a four.
He's a number four starter.
I mean, he was second on their team in innings this year,
but they had a number one
at his peak. He's their fourth best starter. I'd say that's what he should be. He's a four on a championship team.
They had a number one, a true number one. I think that Corey Kluber has earned the legit. He's a number one starter.
3 years in a row, he has been a well above average starter. In two of those years, you could argue he's been the best starting pitcher in the American League.
So that's the number one. Then they have a number four who pitched in the division series, but basically did not pitch, bled, but didn't pitch in the ALCS.
Right.
A five in Josh Tomlin, who pitched better than that.
He's a good five.
But he's a number five.
He actually probably fits the four profile better.
Let's say another number four.
Yeah, he was really good this year. And, but he's also like been dead for several years. I mean, like in terms of major league contributions, Josh Tomlin for the last several years was kind of like he's still around.
So a number four, and then you really can't say Ryan Merritt, for as good as an outing as that was, a number six if you're being charitable right now.
Right.
Could he be something more than that?
He might
one day become a number four. That's your aspiration if you're Ryan Merritt. Again, this is nothing away from him, but is that he becomes Josh Tomlin and is at best a four.
Honestly, like, to me, he reminds me of T.J. McFarland that the Indians had lost in the Rule 5 to the Orioles and was a fringy Rule 5 keep for 3 years. You know, that's what he reminds me of. A few years from now, Ryan Merritt will be like the other guys who are the long men in the Indians' bullpen right now, who are like Jeff Manship and Zach McAllister. He's that phylum of pitcher. He, like you said, peak value, fourth or fifth starter. But really, this is the role, and then... So
and that is their rotation.
Right.
This is the rotation. If Trevor Bauer is healthy and he says he'll be able to pitch in the World Series, we don't know that yet.
Right.
And if he can't, I mean, this is mind-boggling.
It is.
But you can do that nowadays. And this is the thing that fascinated me about yesterday.
Ryan Merritt's getting ready to make a start in game three. You know.
Ryan Merritt, the thing that I do think was key in that is there was no expectation with Ryan Merritt that he would go through the lineup even a full two times. Two times was the max.
That's right.
You won't face anyone three times. And the key of that is that when you go out and that's your approach, it is a little bit freeing in some ways for a pitcher because there is no, I'm going to hold back, I need... You don't say, I'm going to break out my third pitch the second or third time through the lineup. There's no reason to do that because...
How'd I get this guy out last time? Oh, wait, there wasn't a last time. This is the first time I'm facing any of these guys, basically.
You don't look at it thinking long term. You think short term.
Yep.
And this is one of the things that I do think with this, the newfound way that most playoff games go with the starters and the bullpen, not with the aces. Not with the Kershaws, not with the Klubers, not with the Bumgarters.
Right.
But with the normal guy, one of the advantages of this is when you tell Josh Tomlin or you tell Ryan Merritt, do not save anything. I want you going at 100% from the first pitch.
Right.
And when you, and don't worry, we're going to be coming to get you pretty soon. It does make that guy more effective than if this is a normal Sunday in the middle of the season,
right?
And Ryan Merritt comes up, and you're saying,
and you don't have a day off the next day,
where you're saying, okay, we need six out of you,
yeah.
Because if you need six, as a pitcher, you've got to pitch differently than if it's give me the best four you got,
right? And I go back to what you wrote before the playoffs about days off. And how the schedule plays. And JJ, I think that's a huge part of it because you couldn't be as aggressive with the bullpen as Terry Francona has been with different days off, could you?
No. I mean, and think about it this way. They're using Andrew Miller. So far, they've used Andrew Miller in every key win they've had, basically.
Where is this article that you wrote?
Yeah, I'll tweet it out after.
Was this last year?
Or no, I wrote year? I wrote it. It was like in August, though, I want to say.
Ah, okay.
But Andrew Miller pitched one plus. He didn't pitch one. He pitched one plus in effectively every key game they've had in the postseason so far. But he does this, and he's never, he's yet to really have to do this back to back to back.
Right. That's right.
There's enough, I mean, and now, again, yeah, they used him hard, but at the same time, he's sitting, he's going to have today off. He's going to have tomorrow off. He's going to have Saturday off. He's going to have Sunday off. By the time they roll around again, and it's like, and then it's going to be for 2 days. If he needs him to go extended innings in game one and game two, and then you go, you know what? But you got the day off. And one of these days, we're not going to need to do it.
And that's the thing. You hope that game one, that Corey Kluber, hey, he's your ace. He can get you six innings. That's
or
really,
seven.
But right now, you really, to me, you're hoping for six.
Mm-hmm.
You could maybe bridge an inning with Brian Shaw.
Right.
Depending on where you are in the lineup.
I was going to say, that's the thing. But the other thing about how they're using Miller, which is also smart, is if it gets to after six and you go, well, the middle of the lineup's up, then you say, okay, it's Miller time.
Coming in, exactly.
And you, if And then at that point, the reality is you may use them for two.
Right.
But if you go at the same time, if it's a three-run lead, then maybe you do say, you know what, we got an inning out of Miller.
And we're facing
got
7-8-9.
Which, and again, I can't remember who's got the home field, but if it's 7-8-9.
It's the American League.
Yeah, okay. 7-8-9, well, you will be facing a DH, not a pitcher there.
Right.
But if it's 7-8-9, especially in a National League park where you go, okay, it's going to be that and a pinch hitter.
Exactly.
We're okay with Brian Shaw for this.
It's going to be very tempting for the Indians in the World Series to go Kluber, Tomlin, again, depending on Bauer's availability. If let's say Bauer is available, but they're going to wait till Game 3 to give him extra time. If they go Kluber, Tomlin, Bauer, would you go Merritt Game 4 or would you come back with Kluber? I would imagine you'd come back with Kluber Game 4.
I do think it partly, again, it's one of those things that does depend somewhat. Well, actually, I don't even know who that is because we saw Terry Francona's approach. They were up.
That's what I'm saying.
If they were up 3-0,
they went Kluber. They wanted to sweep the leg. I'm with them.
And the thing that you have to go Kluber in Game 4 if you want to have him as a realistic more than a couple of inning option in Game 7.
Exactly. Now I know we could talk more about the American League Championship Series, but that makes me go segue to the NL. Because I was debating this with my 12-year-old this morning. The Cubs beat the Dodgers last night, 10-2, sloppy game, almost 4 hours, 6 errors. Cubs at their offensive, Schwarber on with Addison Russell really breaking the seal with that 2-run homer. And then great Caesar's ghost, so it is the ghost of Matt Caesar's bat in Anthony Rizzo's hands for key 2-run single and a home run of his own.
A home run, which followed just a couple of pitches after he had just missed a home. I mean,
yeah.
That was an at-bat where he was really driving the ball.
So you got two of their biggest slumping hitters get hot, find their groove. Even Russell had two or three other really quality at-bats. And then he had the one infield single where he kind of tapped one. Even his out early in the game, was a second inning, was mm-hmm. to the wall. I thought he had put a good swing
right,
on it.
Right, that was the one in the center field, if I remember right, yeah.
It was the left. It was the left, actually. But I thought he put a good swing on it.
Yeah.
But so those guys, so a lot of positive things happened for the Cubs. Game 5, we've seen Clayton Kershaw on short rest throughout this postseason. My point to my son this morning was, I know Maeda's better at home this year. I understand that he's good. But I would go Kershaw Game 5 because that way he's an option for a Game 7. And
although we do know now with Clayton Kershaw, if he goes Game 6,
right.
He's an option for Game 7.
This
it's just going to be less.
This is true, but I think you're better off, for me, Kershaw Game 5 and a little bit of rest if he's available for Game 7 versus rested Kershaw for Game 6. What say you, J.J. Cooper? Where do you fall on that?
Oh, I do think...
It's tough.
It's one of those, it's tough to know without knowing how Kershaw really is, but the problem is that a competitor like that, this is part of the craziness of it is that you're not going to know.
Right. No, that's right.
there's no part of Clayton Kershaw that's going to go, yeah, no, I'm really, the back is flaring up a little bit. No, he's going to tell you he's fine. He wants to go.
Right.
I don't think they right now, I mean, it does feel like that there's not a whole lot of trust in Kenta Maeda right now.
Correct.
And and I don't think we'd be having this discussion if it was Julio Urias and it was, or Clayton Kershaw, I would be more inclined to say, no, hold off on Kershaw. Because the funny thing, I thought Urias, I know he gets the loss, but I thought he pitched pretty well last night.
I agree. I thought he was good. I thought he was good last night.
He
made this big mistake to Addison Russell. Hung a breaking ball, but off-speed pitch. But I thought in general, the moment certainly wasn't too big for Julio Urias. I thought he pitched really well. I also thought that John Lackey was in and out, dancing in and out of trouble a lot. But John Lackey is entertaining. Let's be honest. I mean, for the guy having the bad face, he's not a scout's favorite for the good face. He's got the bad face. He's perpetually got the bad face. But he also gets the worst face when he's dropping F-bombs left and right.
I
find him entertaining.
I did enjoy – I tweeted out last night like our scouting report from when he was drafted out
that.
Of Grayson County Community College, where he was a better hitter than he
was. Right, he
was
first baseman. He went to UT Arlington as a two-way guy. He was a first base pitcher. First base closer, I think, at Arlington, then transferred to Grayson.
And hit .440 with 16 homers at Grayson.
That was minus -5 bats.
No.
That was .99, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't minus -5 bats. It was just the other. Wow, that's very impressive.
But The thing about it is that the write-up said, like, if, and I can't even remember the name of the guy because the guy has been lost to the ether, but if so-and-so signs with the Mariners as the draft and follow, and I'm saying this and John's going to remember who the guy was, but
1999 Texas draft and follow.
If he so-and-so signs with the Mariners as the draft and follow, then...
Sam Hayes?
I don't think so, but... Then Lackey will be the most attractive, JUCO on the Texas draft scene or whatever.
That's funny.
And multiple people pointed out, it's like, that's the last time that most attractive has ever been used with John Lackey, which I thought was pretty good.
That's kudos. Really funny. But, Brian Edwards, I would not have gotten Brian Edwards. Astros draft and follow Brian Edwards.
Oh, okay. But
long and lanky. He's already been clocked at 93, 94. He is just learning to pitch. That's great stuff.
But... No, I think I'd probably still go with Maeda because I do think that you – I think there's also a cumulative wear if you keep
– I agree.
If you – at some point, Kershaw can't keep doing this.
And I'm wrong about Maeda, by the way. He was actually – while his overall numbers are a little bit better, like 3.22 ERA at home, 3.74 on the road right. – His component numbers are virtually the same, home and away. So there's not a huge advantage in pitching him at home and away.
But I would probably say you're going to need – you got to win two. So I would be inclined to say go with Maeda. And again, that to me does not preclude because Clayton Kershaw is insane.
That's the other option. It doesn't preclude – bringing Kershaw in game five in relief if you need him especially.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that though.
You wouldn't do that?
No. If Clayton Kershaw's pitching, if he's my game six, he's my game six.
And what if this game gets sideways early? What if it's like 6-4? What if the Dodgers take a big early lead but the Cubs rally? Well, it's like 6-5 in the fourth inning.
But this is the tough thing about it.
Would you bring in Kershaw then?
No.
And try to just let him have the rest of game five and you have him again in game seven?
No. Because I would
be ready to deploy Clayton Kershaw at any time. Because the Dodgers, to me, if I'm the Dodgers, I'm having Kershaw, and you have three games left to win. It's a best of three series. I want Kershaw and Jansen to win me two of them. That's how I think of it. I think you can almost do it as a tandem.
But this is the dangerous thing about this, though, is that if. Because I do also think,
I'm turning into Brian Kenny now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But Rich Hill, I do feel comfortable. Again, you're not going to get seven out of him. I do feel reasonably comfortable about Rich Hill making one of those starts. He's been effective. I know. I felt he was more effective in that game last game than you.
Yeah, I thought he was hittable. But Maeda, I thought got squeezed in his first playoff start. His first start of this series, I thought he got squeezed really badly in game one. In Wrigley, so.
But I do.
I have as much confidence. I guess I would say I have as much confidence in Maeda as I would have in Rich Hill personally.
I do have a concern, though, which is, as you said, they've spackled together this bullpen in front of Jansen.
Yeah.
And the concern is if we're talking about Kenta Maeda in this kind of four inning role, almost like that really has become kind of the new thing for the non aces. If he's in a four inning role. I do kind of worry about what you're spackling in ahead. Much more though, so, and this is what I said when the Cubs made these moves.
Right, you don't really think, man, I've really got to make sure that I can, how soon can I go to Joe Blanton? That's not what Dave Roberts is thinking.
Whereas you look at the Cubs, right. And I do feel like with the Cubs, if you have to go in inning four, you have guys where you can say, okay, you know what, if I get two innings on Mike Montgomery, I feel like I can get two innings.
That'd be a nice point of pride for you last night, JJ, to see Mike Montgomery come through in a big moment. For those of you who don't know, that's like one of the all-time prospect arguments in Baseball America history. And both JJ and I are on decent footing with this one. So, was it 2011?
I think it was, yeah.
Or 2010. I think it was after the 2010 season.
Yeah, I think you are right. I think Montgomery 11 is...
Oh, no, it was 11. Yeah. It was after Will Myers' lost year, and that was also first-round pick Bubba Starling. So Mike Montgomery had come into finished 2010 as the Royals' number one prospect. 2011 goes to AAA and just gets ramekacked for most of the year in the PCL.
And has had, at this point, an elbow issue of some sort.
He threw 151 innings, but there had been an elbow issue. I think it was the year before. That's right.
And so there was some concern that there was some – he didn't get cut on, but is this still something lingering?
The thing is, I bet you that current day JJ would not rank Mike Montgomery as the number one prospect with his 4.12 walks per nine.
You're
2016
right.
JJ would never rank a starting pitcher with a 4.1 walks per nine number one. So we were trying to think, who is the Royals' number one prospect going to be?
Which, by the way, this was on the heels of the year before a fun debate, which was, is it Hosmer? Is it Moustakas? Is it Myers?
Yeah.
Because Myers, the year before, is the year where he had gone to high A and like hit like 380 in high A to finish up and had
Full year.
As a catcher.
Right. First full year as a catcher had just been like Dale Murphy light, basically. And Moustakas had been good and Hosmer had been good. So 2011, you had that. You had Will Myers, who had like his lost season with his, he fell on the concrete with his knee and had this random infection. And basically you could kind of tell the Royals like didn't like him, you know. You could tell they didn't like him. But he had this, but he was looking good in the fall league. And then you had Bubba Starling in a $7 million
contract.
And moved
to the outfield also.
So. Right. But I remember, I went to the fall league. I remember saying, hey, I'm not a scout, but Will Myers was in the same hitting group as Bryce Harper and Mike Trout and did not look out of place. In fact, he fit right in with those guys offensively. And so I just wrote, you know, here's some information, throwing it out to you. If you don't like it, throw it right back. So you had Montgomery, you had Myers, you had Bubba. You were in Team Montgomery. I was on Team Myers. Jim Callis was on Team Bubba.
I will say that we were...
2 out of 3 ain't bad. So... Team
you were right. I mean, the reality is in hindsight, you were right. Like, if I had to do it
That's
now,
one of the reasons I like that story.
But if I had to do it now, clearly I would put Will Myers one. But it is good.
Mike Montgomery has started to. It's taken him a while. But the last 3 years, really, and it's gotten a little better every year. He's shown that he is an impact pitcher. Now it might be in this new role.
But I'll tell
you
this.
He can start.
I think that what you're going to see is next year. I bet you anything he'll be starting for the Cubs. They're going to have a little bit of, you know, they're sorting through next year, or he's going to kind of fill
in. I think it's likely.
I think he will end up being one of those. It's going to be kind of the back-end starter for them. But I think it's funny, like, he now, like, going to the pen, I do think, again, has helped him.
He threw 100 really good innings this year. He's a left-hander with good stuff. His walk rate was a little high with the Cubs. It was under 3 with the Mariners. I still think the shorter role suits him better than the full starting
but
role.
But I think he ends up being kind of this... The Cubs have liked having this kind of swing guy.
Yep, that's right.
It's
like they have with
Travis Wood. It's really kind of that Travis Wood role. He does the Travis Wood role. The difference is he throws harder.
Are pitchers going to turn into running backs, to use another football thing? Is everyone going to get turned into a middle reliever? It just seems like you're either a one or a two...
A closer. Or you're one of the guys.
In
the playoffs, In the playoffs, that's what it is now.
It's amazing how this has evolved.
But the thing about it is how...
You're either Bumgarner, Jansen, or Mike Montgomery. You're in three buckets.
But the thing about it is what it is now, though, also with it is that it used to be that your roster construction for the playoffs was how's our 1 through 4 starter, how's our closer, and then what everything else.
Yeah.
And now what the Cubs did, and I think they're very smart about doing this, is Chapman for the 9th.
Yes.
Okay. Then we've got Rondon and Edwards.
And Strope.
And Montgomery.
Yeah.
And it just
and Wood.
And Wood. And you're like, okay, so if we need to, we can go 4th to 9th.
Yes.
And we're fine.
And Grimm.
Just
a Grimm. They have so many
options. And they did this from the start of the season. Before the season,
pretty much.
They acquired every... They had so many kind of... This guy could turn out relief options.
They did.
During the season, it was like, you know, let's try him. They sorted through the former closer, Giants closer. Brian Wilson was, you know, was it Wilson?
No, it was last year.
No, who was it this year?
Oh, Joe Nathan.
Yeah, Joe Nathan was there.
They gave him 3 outs.
Joe Nathan was there for like an hour and a half, but it was like, okay, let's try to. No, that didn't work. Okay, we're moving on. But the idea.
Hey, Brian Mattis, is there anything left here? Okay, no.
But the idea was all along was, can we figure out a way to make sure that this bullpen is not 1, 2, or 3 pitchers deep? Let's make it 6 or 7 pitchers deep for the postseason.
Yeah, and that's what they did. I mean, like, and one of those guys might be Rob Zisprisny if they advance to the World Series. So, 3-game series, Cubs and Dodgers. Cubs certainly get some momentum back.
We get baseball this weekend now.
Which, I love that. And we always knew the American League Championship Series was the undercard. We didn't know it was this much of an undercard. We didn't know it was going to be 5 games. And, all right, 3 games left of the National League. Everyone can focus their attention. And how about MLB Network and Fox Sports 1, JJ, getting their best ratings they've ever gotten for games involving the Cubs? What a big surprise involving the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are, this year, they are very good for the baseball's brand, I think. So it's encouraging. I did want to bring up one other point, one other player on this podcast, and that's Mike Napoli. Shout out to the Newberg Report, you know, Jamie Newberg with the the big Rangers fan who's been doing this Rangers report and blog for more than a decade now, which is pretty impressive.
It is.
A lot of bloggers come and go in the baseball universe. I've seen a million bloggers. I've rocked them all. But Jamie Newberg's one who's stuck
staying
through
power.
It. A lot of staying power, and which is really, very impressive. He had this note in there today about Mike Napoli. I always forgot that Mike Napoli went Angels to Blue Jays and then in the Vernon Wells trade. I mean, just like an epically bad Mike Socia move. And it was Mike Socia. But believe me, it was Socia. It was terrible. And then you go Napoli to Texas for Frank Francisco. That's a bad one for the Blue Jays. So Mike Napoli now, just in the last 7 years, 2009 Angels were a great team. And they had the best record in the American League, other than the Yankees. Yankees won the World Series that year, but that was the Nick Adenhart death team. That was a great Angels team. A lot of spirit. Oh, that was probably the last great Angels team. I know they won 98 games in 2014.
I know they failed, but 98 games, that qualifies as a great team. You win 98. I know they.
But they had your boy. They had our boy Corey Rasmus.
I mean, they had injuries. They were on fumes by September.
They were on a lot of fumes.
But that's still,
They won 97 games in 2000. That was a great team. Then he was on the 2011 Rangers that went to the World Series. Mm-hmm. 2010 and 11 Rangers, I guess. I think it's 2011. 2013 Red Sox, now 2016 Indians. This is his third World Series with his third different franchise for Mike Napoli. And it's just a really unusual career, JJ, because he's at career highs in home runs and RBIs this year. And yet, one of his lesser years is a regular.
And this is a guy who had trouble getting, after the Red Sox, it was like, okay, is this guy going to be able to get a 3-year deal because of concerns about the medical?
He had all kinds of medical with the hip. He had the sleep apnea issue that he had surgery for. Last year between Boston and Texas, he hit 207. He looked like he was washed last year. He had 18 home runs. Comes back with 34 home runs this year. I know he's only hit 233. He also has a career high 194 strikeouts. So Mike Napoli embraced the data this year and just said, let's go. let's go. Mike Napoli, though, has also just, he just seems like he's like what everyone imagines. He's like Johnny Gomes, but he's a good player, not just like a good platoon player and a great guy to have around in, America. This guy just seems like he's been one of the better players. And like we said the other day, he is a guy that everyone gets comp to.
You said one of the better players. I think that's one of the key things about this is that he's
he's one of the better guys who's like the converted catcher to first base guy. Right. He's the kind of a poor man's Paul Konerko,
the
basically.
Other fascinating part about this is, and that's why I like that you brought up Gomes, because Gomes is like the 20... Gomes, on these teams, like successful teams that Gomes was on, he ranged from being the 8th to 9th best guy on the lineup, to a little bit better or a little bit worse than that.
Right.
Whereas Napoli, but Napoli's never been, there's not been one of these teams where Napoli was ever the star.
Right, exactly.
He was always...
He's always a great wingman.
He's a wingman. He's... Now, this Indians team, which I do think archaeologists digging through this years from now could look at this Indians team and go, that was a World Series team?
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean that with massive credit to them.
Yeah.
Because, okay, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to digress this, but it is. How many profile guys?
I'm just looking at that. I beat you to it. I mean, like, so
shortstop Francisco Lindor. Check, check, check,
right.
Check.
And Napoli's wound up being, I think, a profile first baseman.
Okay.
But
I'll
it's
give you
close.
That.
He has a 104 OPS plus.
I don't know if
so
I was
going to
say the hit tool for him.
With 34 homers and 100 RBIs. He's like a class. He's like a Joe Carter.
He's almost a second division profile.
Almost. He's right on the borderline.
Okay.
Jason Kipnis is a profile.
Profile. Check, check,
and
check.
And especially, he almost defines the new profile.
Yes. But he's absolutely
second
profile.
Baseman.
Lindor, Jose
like
Ramirez
said,
is not profile.
He is not. That said.
He's good.
He really had a great year this year.
Yeah, he had a great year.
I didn't realize how good his year was.
I don't say he's profile.
But he is not profile. 11 home runs is not a profile guy. They have maybe one profile outfielder. And I would say that Tyler Naquin performed like a profile center fielder.
Although you might want a little more as far as like if you're being really a stickler for the profile. Actually, in Cleveland, I would say he fits the profile fine. There's parks where you would say maybe we want a little
exactly.
rangier.
If he was in the National League West, I think you'd want a rangier center fielder. But you're going to go to Petco and San Francisco.
But for Cleveland, you're fine there.
If you were with the Giants, he'd be like, with that giant right field, you'd be like, Tyler Naquin would be a great right fielder there. He's got the arm strength. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the Giants pro department's already like, yes, we know. Thanks for blowing it, Manuel. I'm sure they're not saying that. That's about it. That's the extent of their profile, guys, because Lonnie Chisenhall was supposed to be a profile third baseman, and he's an 8-home-run-hitting right fielder. Rajai Davis would be if he played center field.
I loved Rajai Davis going back to like 2002, 2003, but he's not profile.
What's the Connecticut junior college he's from? Isn't that him?
I can't.
I think it's like...
Because I don't go back that far with him. I remember him from High A was when I...
University of Connecticut at Avery Point in Groton, Connecticut.
I remember having discussions with Chris Klein about Rajai Davis back in like 2003.
Yeah, so it's really a...
2004.
It's not... And again, where their profile is... They got to the World Series this year. We thought that it would be through this... Power pack.
Because they had
rotation.
A profile rotation.
Exactly.
If Salazar's healthy, Carrasco's healthy, Bauer's healthy, if you said that they went into the postseason with Kluber as their one, Carrasco as their two, Salazar as their three, Bauer as their four,
right.
That's profile.
Everywhere. That's what it's supposed to be. And then.
And Andrew Miller is every bit the epitome of profile reliever.
Yeah, and then you look at that trade. But I remember at the time thinking of four pitchers for Andrew Miller. I mean, three pitchers and Clint Frazier for Andrew Miller. It's like, yeah, so? I mean, you know. I mean, what a... it's amazing what Andrew Miller has been traded for in recent years.
And the funny thing
His career has been traded for Miguel Cabrera. He's been traded for Eduardo Rodriguez. Not quite Miguel Cabrera. And now this four-player trade with the Yankees.
But the funny thing about it is that that trade right there will benefit some rebuilding team in 2017, because it is like it gives open license to making a trade like that, because you see the value of trading significant talent for a reliever like that. At the same time, the problem is going to be for whoever does that trade is that there are very few Andrew Millers in the world.
Very few Andrew Millers in the world. And I just, you know, this was a paragraph in our Orioles organization overview, is that the Orioles have made a lot of those trades. Dan Duquette, not afraid to make those trades. And Andrew Miller was fantastic when he pitched for the Orioles. He was outstanding in 2014. They traded Eduardo Rodriguez for him. They've traded a lot of prospects, like who's the guy with the Brewers? Zach Davies, is that it?
Yeah.
They've traded Eduardo Rodriguez. They've traded a lot of prospects. None of the players they've traded the prospects for are still in Baltimore. You know, Bud Norris or Gerardo Parra or Andrew Miller. So, and Andrew Miller's going to be in Cleveland for, what, 2 more years? I think they have 2 more years of control. It was a 3-year contract he signed this offseason. So... we'll see what dizzying heights Andrew Miller can get to. He's gotten to some dizzying heights already. Well-deserved American League Championship Series MVP. Cleveland Indians in the World Series. Chicago Cubs and Los Angeles Dodgers tied at 2 in the NLCS. I'm looking forward to a weekend of intense playoff baseball, JJ.
Same here.
All right. Well, we'll see tomorrow to recap Game 5 and set up Game 6 and 7 on the next Baseball America Playoff Podcast. For JJ, I'm John. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.